Today we have on the show Sean. Sean is a physiotherapist, pro athlete, and is from the city of Ottawa. Right now he's residing in Toronto, and he has quite the resume. He has been a he's a two-sport university athlete. He has played professional basketball in the European leagues and with our local team here in Ottawa, the Ottawa Black Jacks. And he is now in Toronto being a forever white belt, learning from people, but will be coming back to Ottawa to work with the basketball organization in Ottawa, the Black Jacks, as their director of sport and performance, correct?
Yeah, that's right, man. Thanks for having me on the show. Excited to be here.
I'm excited because you have quite the experience of being in sport, going through injuries, going through school, traveling the world, and helping people. And I think that excited to have you on the show because you're going to be able to share with us a lot of experiences that you've had working with different people. I'm going to get right into my first question with you. And that is, what are some of the most common injuries you see between athletes, the everyday mom and dad who's going to the gym and working out? There's got to be some commonalities that you see. So what would be a couple of those injuries?
Just to give a little more background, a lot of my history is with basketball players and working with professional basketball players, but I've worked in all sorts of areas with general pop people as well as different sports. And it's cool to see the different trends between what you see at the levels of high performance sport and what you see with general population as well. But I'd say a couple of the different trends or some of the common injuries I see is low back and hip issues. So whether you're a high performance athlete, just taxing your hips a lot for power output, running, jumping, cutting can be pretty stressful on the hips. But then also in a more sedentary or general population, the hips and low back seem to be an issue as well. And I think that could be for different reasons. We can get more into that later. More of kind of a sedentary sitting lifestyle can be more contributing to issues in the hip low back area. And then the other one I see a lot is knee and ankle issues. And specifically because I've had those injuries myself. So I had an ACL surgery on my right knee, and then I had three ankle surgeries on my left knee. So I'll see a lot of people, both athletes and non-athletes, who know that I've had those injuries, and they're more comfortable coming to see me because they know I've been through it and I've done a little more research on those joints specifically and have a better idea how to treat those joints. But you see, foot and ankle issues really common, even in general population people, because even that population is on their feet a lot, doing a lot of different running, cutting, jumping sports, maybe not at the same frequency that high level athletes are, but still it can just the total load on those tissues eventually takes its toll, especially if movement patterns aren't perfect or as ideal as they should be. I'd say that the hips and low back, as well as the foot and ankle, are pretty common ones that I see.
It's funny because I was a rugby player back in the day, and me and my friends always talk about going back to play rugby. And the number one thing I say why I don't want to go back is because I'm scared of cutting, right? Like that ankle to hard stops, cutting, going left. I'm just worried that my body can't handle that type of pressure on the ankle or the joint anymore. So you must see a lot of weekend warriors. They're a basketball player back in the day, or baseball or soccer. And then all of a sudden their friends call them up and say, hey, we're joining a league. Do you want to come play with us next month? And they go from couch to playing, and boom, you must see ankles, knees. And what you're saying though, as a theme, is that lower body is where you see a lot of the injuries.
Yeah, okay. I would say so for sure. And I was just going to say, to add to your point there, specifically with saying as we get a bit older, and people like to throw out the age 30 sometimes for how you might want to start to address things differently once you get a bit older. But I'm about that age too, just turned 31, and you'll see Achilles issues, like Achilles ruptures, be a little bit more common, and especially in the male population as you get a bit older. And something that we're seeing more recently too in Gen Pop is pickleball being one of the main culprits in Achilles issues, because a lot of these older individuals who maybe haven't been as dynamic with their cutting and loading that Achilles and that foot and ankle complex, they go to pickleball, which is maybe it's not as demanding as tennis or basketball or soccer in terms of speed, but it's still a big jump compared to what these people are used to. It's that big jump in terms of intensity and load that you kind of have to look out for and make sure that you're used to and prepared for before you just jump into an activity that you haven't done in a long time.
It's low back, you said hips,
yep.
Ankles, knees, and Achilles. Okay. If I'm saying to you that I'm going to go start playing pickleball in the next 3 months, what are some exercises that you would give me to prepare myself for that sport? Just even starting to get back off the couch, and I'm going to be back in the gym, back doing running, back playing a sport. What are some exercises that you would give that general population to get their body warmed up to get back out there and playing?
I'd have to get a better idea first for what they've been doing over the last few months. That's basically when you're jumping in from like no plyometrics to some plyometrics, that's the instance where you'd be most likely to irritate something. So you want to make sure that you're giving them a good start point. So maybe just some gentle skipping variations, just some little hops on the spot, maybe some hops going forward, backwards, sideways, in all different directions, just to prepare that Achilles and that foot for some more dynamic and plyometric movements. But then also there's a little bit more eccentric or kind of absorbing of force that you need to prepare for with a game like pickleball, especially particularly for the knees. So having strong quadriceps, some sort of lunge variation, you know, forward lunges, sideways lunges, making sure that you're exposing your knees and these tendons to a little bit of an eccentric stress would also be helpful as well.
So Sean, just to stop you there, what is the eccentric stress? Can you let people know? Because I hear more and more about that in the, when I'm listening to podcasts about seniors having to really work on the eccentric load. Just so people who don't know what that means, what is that?
You can get pretty nuanced with this, but I would say generally it's when you're the muscle, and it's going to be muscle specific. So generally when we're talking about the quadricep, for example, when that knee is bending and the quad is lengthening. So say on the way down of a squat or on the way down of a lunge, that would be the eccentric part of the motion when, you know, our body is working on absorbing the force rather than producing a ton of force, you know, to be explosive. Stuff like, think about more as the downward portion of movement, say going down in a squat, going down the stairs will be an also eccentric form of contraction for your quads. That's kind of the idea. And that's, I know Peter Attia talks about this as well in terms of, you know, training for longevity, but we're a lot more likely to be injured during an eccentric movement because, you know, the forces are greater. Making sure that we add in some training that involves some of these eccentric, even step downs, things like that, you're going to be better prepared for that same eccentric contraction, but just in a faster, more unpredictable environment. So making some single leg eccentric work a good part of your training can be really valuable to prepare your knees and some of your other lower tissues for those higher velocity movements.
What are some of the exercises in your experience from working with basketball players to the general population? What are two or three exercises that commonly people have come back to you and said they've noticed a difference in how their bodies performed when they're either on the professional pitch or just everyday life? It's a generic question. It's a generic question, but you know, there's got to be one or two go-tos that you kind of see 80% work.
Hanging from a chin-up bar is one that I really enjoy giving. Okay. And this is more for the upper body, specifically for the shoulders, but this can also have a positive impact for the low back, getting some decompression through your lumbar spine when you're able to hang from, you know, it doesn't have to be a chin-up bar necessarily. You can hang from anything. Even if your feet are touching the ground, that can be okay. And I've just seen it really help resolve a lot of shoulder issues, shoulder mobility, and even improve some shoulder stability and strength as well, and then help clear up some back issues as well at the same time. So dead hangs is a big one. I know this isn't an exercise, but just sitting on the floor is another thing that I find I suggest to a lot of different people, because it's a way that you can start to break up that sitting time. It's a way that you can start to expose your hips to all these different ranges of motion closer to their end ranges. And it changes the stability demand at the lumbar spine and hips as well, which is something that we don't get with sitting in a chair. We're not necessarily asking our hips and lumbar spine to stabilize ourselves. We're kind of just slumped there with not a lot of tension. So sitting on the floor can add a little bit of tension to your core and change the positioning there. That's something that I find I'm suggesting to a lot of people, because it's easy to inject a little bit of that into your day.
That's, you know, you watch TV at the end of the day, instead of just sitting on the couch, it's basically get like a blanket, just put on the floor and just sit there for 10, 20 minutes. I'm Sikh. So when we go to the Sikh temple, you have to sit on the floor. And I always know when I'm tight, I dread when I sit down, I'm like, oh God, this hurts. But you know, as you get, it reminds me, okay, I got to work on my mobility, because when we're at the Sikh temple, we got to sit on the floor. But that's a really easy one. And is there anything in the gym or anything you would give them outside of that? I mean, a drag hang is pretty easy to do.
Yeah. So, I mean, doing some sort of single leg exercise, some sort of single leg hinge, I find is really beneficial for most people. Most of us just don't spend enough time on one leg. We probably should have better balance than we do on one leg. And that's something that we tend to lose as we get a bit older as well. So you definitely want to make sure that you keep some sort of single leg stimulus in there, just for the sake of balance, but also for the sake of those hip endurance muscles, like your glute medius on the side, that can get some good stimulus when you take that other foot off the ground. Different single leg options in terms of hinging.
What is a hinge? Because again, we're going to have people who don't know what that is. So let's walk through and go backwards. Yeah. Please.
Yeah, there's two-leg hinging and one-leg hinging, but basically if you're on two legs and you just think about reaching your butt towards the wall behind you, that would be how I would describe a hinge. And then you can do the same thing just on one leg, taking your other leg off. And people also describe that as a hip airplane sometimes as well. It's basically very minimal knee bend. Most of the movement's taking place at the hips. You're trying to lengthen the glutes, which seems to be something that a lot of people tend to have trouble with for whatever reason. You know, we're not very good at accessing that posterior aspect of our glute and lengthening that out. And sometimes that can be for different reasons, but I find, you know, people seem to struggle with hinging for whatever reason. Adding that in to their program can be a good way for them to get more out of their hip range of motion, as well as strength-wise too.
And that seems like a good warm-up too. If you said, you know, you're going to go play pickleball, or you're going to go work out that day, or go and play, or do a weekend warrior thing on Saturday. It's like, hey, that morning or the night before, sit on the floor, then just try to hang from something before you go and do it, and then do some light hopping, and then do some one leg stability drills before you go and play, instead of just going out there and putting the good old heat and some A535 on there and saying 5 minute warm up and saying, let's go. So those are pretty easy to do. Now, in regards to nutrition and injuries, have you seen a correlation between people's eating habits and the way their body feels? And the reason why I ask this question is I go to see someone for ART, and he says he can always feel someone's nutritional habits in their body in terms of muscle tension, water retention, and just feel their muscles just feel different when nutrition is, or the body isn't as inflamed versus it is inflamed. Have you noticed that as well?
Mm-hmm. I would say like minor differences in terms of systemic inflammation or chronic inflammation. Sometimes that can be obvious when you're working with people in terms of how the tissue feels, in terms of how they respond to touch and compression. So that's definitely something that you may notice. And then the hydration or lack thereof is something that may be obvious as well to touch. So those are two things that, you know, I definitely try to stress with my athletes to, or not even just my athletes, but Gen Pop as well. It's just two really big bang for your buck things, or avoiding those processed foods, you know, that are kind of wreaking that inflammation on our system in a lot of different ways. And generally that's going to help with some body fat too. Just even if you keep most of your things the same, but reduce that processed food intake, like that's going to help with your body fat. And that's going to help with that systemic inflammation as well, and your sensitivity to touch and things like that. So that's one thing that I've definitely noticed. And then from the hydration perspective as well, just making sure that athletes are getting sufficient fluid intake, making sure that there's actually something in that fluid too, and they're not just drinking plain water that's flowing through them, and they might end up even flushing out some of those electrolytes. But yeah, just making sure that they're getting some legitimate water through real food as well too, because like a lot of our hydration is through food, like we know. Sure that they're actually eating a lot of good real food to get some hydration that way as well. Yeah, man, those are the things. And then I find a lot of times too, I'm not even necessarily delving into really specific nutritional protocols or supplemental protocols, but for a lot of people, it's either they need to gain some muscle mass to help prevent injury. So kind of like when I came to see you for the first time over a decade ago, I was, you know, playing college football as a defensive back, and I needed to put on some size and some muscle mass to kind of protect myself and my shoulders and to make it through football season so that I could complete a basketball season afterwards. But so for some people, it might be that a focus on increasing their protein intake and their overall calories to put on some muscle mass. But for probably more people, I would say the focus is probably the opposite in terms of reducing body fat and reducing total body weight, because that seems to be a factor as well with a lot of tendon issues, potentially just general metabolic health. That's something that I tend to be focusing on with people as well.
That's actually a great conversation. Have you seen that when people lose weight, general joint pain and health complaints start to reduce?
Absolutely. And it seems to be just like this, it seems to be like almost a forgotten about factor, where people are used to being at a certain body weight, and they're looking at everything else to see like why they might be in pain, or other levers they can, things they can add in still, you know, other supplements, other treatments, other training regimens, when really it's like the answer is right in front of you. And it unfortunately it's very difficult, obviously. So sometimes that's why it's not being addressed, because it's more difficult to address this thing than addressing or adding in other things. But certainly, especially with the lower body, right? Because a lot of those joints are the ones that are taking the extra load from that excessive body weight. Once you're able to get back into a more healthy body weight range, then sometimes these little aches and pains just sort themselves out in the lower body, especially.
It's amazing, right? Like me and you were talking before we started the podcast, how basics really help the body. It's not just one specific thing. And we forget about the fact that we have seen clients in our office who come to us for joint pain because they think it's a food sensitivity, which there is some correlation. But I'll say to them, I'll say, hey, listen, when you were 18 to 20 years old, you were 150 pounds. Today, you're 220. I don't think that's good for your joints, because you're changing the way your body works and functions and gets out of bed. Your body's not made to handle that much load all the time. And once they lose 5, 10, 20 pounds, they'll come back and say, half my stuff is gone. I'm like, well, yeah, that you just lower the load, right? And here they are doing all these different therapies and different things. Whereas, you know, you have to have that. It's the hard conversation, obviously, but it's definitely a big bang for the buck. Now, in your experience, have you seen some supplements work for helping people during an inflamed state or just general pain. Like, let's say you're helping someone and they're still kind of in that last 10 to 15% of pain. You can see their progression getting better. What are some supplements that you've used, or if you've seen no supplements work, that have actually helped clients feel better with their pain management?
The first thing, the first place my mind goes with a question like that is how can I help them improve their sleep quality?
Okay.
Because if I can help my patient or my athlete improve their sleep quality, that's going to improve their pain. That's going to improve their recovery and their outcome.
Is there research to show that sleep and pain management are correlated?
I would say so, yeah.
Okay.
I don't have any study like off the top of my head.
Yeah.
But certainly in terms of over the course of time, if your sleep quality is low, your sensitivity to pain is probably going to be higher.
Okay, and so your feedback is that's just
like I said, I don't
experience.
Have one study in mind for that, but I feel like I've seen that, yeah. And that could be acute and that could also be chronic. But particularly with chronic patients, it's generally that needs to be the focus. It's like if this person's been in pain for 3+ months, what kind of treatment and what kind of exercise and what kind of supplementation, what kind of things can I do to help this person get better sleep? And the first one that comes to mind for me is a good magnesium supplement, like a magnesium biglycinate is one that I find I'm recommending to a lot of gen pop or athletes just to try to improve their sleep quality a little bit at night. And then in turn with better sleep quality, that can help with their recovery. So that's a big one. And then the other one is just omega-3s, where I find from what I've researched, that seems to be one of the more deficient nutrients that people are dealing with, along with vitamin D. Like I try not to get too into the weeds, but those are the biggest three that I'll recommend to people just generally, like without a blood test, just generally knowing that a lot of people are deficient in this and that having adequate levels are going to help with your sleep quality and your overall levels of inflammation. Yeah, the omega-3s are a big one as well. That can just help bring down some of that inflammation. And then the vitamin D as well, in terms of circadian rhythm, as well as, I mean, vitamin D is good for a million things. But I find, those are the three that I'm suggesting to most people that I find seem to have.
And are you recommending high dose fish oils, low dose, like 1 to 2 capsules, 1,000 milligrams? What are you recommending? Because I mean, we've seen protocols from coaches that me and you have seen that in an inflamed state, they're taking 6 capsules per day, 600 to 700 milligrams of EPA DHA per capsule, which is pretty strong. Are you recommending things like that? Or are you just recommending a tablespoon a day? What's your recommendation around fish oils?
Yeah. So with fish oils, I'll go anywhere from 1 to 2 grams per meal. So up to, 3 to 6 grams a day. Personally, I've experimented with really high doses and I've only seen benefit from that in terms of body fat, how I feel. And then also my mental clarity seems to be a bit higher as well. I have no issue with recommending higher doses, but that's not something that I tend to do. I tend to just keep it a bit more conservative. And then with vitamin D, that's one that I'll generally recommend a bit higher, anywhere up to like 5,000 IUs a day. Most of the time, I don't have blood work working with people for the most part. I don't go that deep. But for this basketball player I was working with in Bulgaria more recently, he was getting some blood work done. I had suggested 2,000 to 3,000 IUs of vitamin D per day for him. He had been on that for a couple months, got the blood work. It was still a bit lower than we wanted it. In a situation like that, then I'd say, okay, let's up this dose and retest in a couple more months. Because sometimes it can take weeks or months to reestablish vitamin D levels from what I've gathered. So generally, I'm a little more conservative with that. Try to get people on vitamin K too, sometimes with vitamin D, because those seem to go well together. And then when it comes to magnesium, I start people off with about 400 milligrams just so make sure they can tolerate it, make sure their gut can tolerate it, and then might slowly increase that up to 800 or 1,000, depending on how active they are. Yeah, I'm not usually recommending anything crazy, just starting people out with smaller doses, making sure they respond well, and increasing it from there if we need to.
What are 3 things that you do for your health every day that are non-negotiable? In your world, let's just be specific. What do you do to keep your body mobile? What are 3 things for your health that you keep? Because obviously you're 31 and you're trying to probably still go out there and show some of the guys a little bit what you got when you're doing drills or something like that. What are 3 things that you do for your health to keep it prime?
Yeah, man. One thing that I like to do is get some sun in the morning. That's something that I've tried to add into my routine over the last few years, just because I notice how it impacts my mood and my sleep later in the day. And usually it's easy to stack that with other things. So a little spinal hygiene routine is something that I've added as well, where I just get outside and I do like a pretty basic, almost yoga looking routine where I'm taking my spine and my shoulders and hips through their full ranges of motion, just very gentle movement, but just trying to expose my joints to their end ranges, trying to build some proprioception there, but it's really not a lot of load. It's more just gentle moving. The sunlight, the gentle movement, walking is also a big one. Like I do a ton of walking throughout the day and it's another great way to get outside and just get some gentle movement and kind of flush your lymphatic system. With all the muscle contraction as well. And then 2 others, I would say, is just breathing through my nose tends to be a focus that I have throughout the day. I find the spinal hygiene and the walking are good kind of triggers for that too. Like generally when I'm doing the spinal hygiene, I'm breathing only through the nose. It's easy to focus on. And then same thing when I'm walking, especially when I'm by myself, easy to focus on. And then the last one is sitting on the floor. And these are so easy for me because I like the saying non-negotiable. And I also like the idea that, hey, we gotta like make these, even on your worst day, you need to be able to do these things, right? So even on my worst day, I can get out and get my walks in. I can sit on the floor for 5 to 10 minutes in a few different positions. I can breathe in through my nose. It doesn't have to be every breath, but throughout the day, it's something that I'm thinking about. Those are the few that come to mind.
It's funny. We've had someone come in, Susan Benoit, who was a breathing coach. And she just reminded our clients, like, when you're sitting at your computer working, breathe through your nose, right? When you're cooking dinner, breathe through your nose. It doesn't have to be a big breath work that you're sitting down for 5 minutes and trying to stop your day. You can just do it while you're doing it. And it's when you tell me that spinal thing that you do, I recently Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu for the past couple of years, several years. And I listened to this guy who said, you know, if you do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and as you age, you should be doing yoga. And I just do, he said, you know, try to do 3 to 5 times a week. Okay, that doesn't work for my schedule, but I've been doing this 3 to 4, 5 minute sequence before I start my workouts of just kind of a couple of different movements. And it's really feels good too. And I'm sedentary, right? Like I sit at a desk for 8 to 12 hours per day. And I find that when I do that in the morning and then I do my workout and I go for a walk at night, what a game changer in terms of just the way your body doesn't feel tight. My aches and pains go down, which is good, because I find that's a limiting range, but they're all little things that just keep everything moving and prime throughout the day. Those are great little things. I'm going to take your sitting on the floor. The one thing I've really taken away is that, you know, sit on the floor more, because there is some centenarians. So people lived over 100 years age. They do about 50 to 100 bodyweight squats a day because they sit on the floor. So they're always getting up and down. That's a part of their strength routine naturally, because they don't lift weights like we do in North America. They're walking, picking up their food from scratch and carrying it home and then up and down on the floor all day long. That's another way to bring in some extra strength movement there, I guess we could say. So this is good. So this is a lot of information for us. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing with us your insight and your experience. Now, where can everybody find you if they wanted to work with you, if they're a basketball player or they're one of our clients or people in Ottawa who have hurt their ankle, hurt their knees, got an Achilles issue? It seems like you're probably the knee to ankle guy to go to see. Where can they find you?
Yeah, man. This summer, I'll be in Ottawa working at the Center for Strength and Athlete Development, as well as Human 2.0 in the East End of Ottawa. So happy to see people there at those gyms and help them with their injuries or whatever their performance goals are. And they can find me on Instagram at the Both of My Legs Fixed by Orthopedic Surgeons. You can reach out to me on Instagram, or I also have a website, thefixphysio.com, where you can reach out to me there as well, and I can set something up.
Well, that's great. We're excited to see you back in the city. This is great. Look forward to seeing more from you. Thank you very much.